Hello, I'm Chris Mackerel. This is number 0239, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0239. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet former inmate Louis Ferrante, host of Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel. How did he get the offer from Discovery to do the show?
When they approached me, they said, "Do you know everything there is to know about prisons?" I said, "I spent 8.5 years in every type of jail you could imagine. Medium and high security, penitentiaries, federal, state, county, you name it, I've been there. And I know how it all works, inside and out. I had to learn quick in order to survive. When I was in, I got to say, I was a lion in the jungle. There's no room for, cupcakes in prison. You've got to be the toughest guy if you want to survive. And that's how it's got to be."
Shane Grinn from Old Time Radio Theater. They recreate classic shows in front of a live audience for a later broadcast online.
I've been a fan of Old Time Radio Theater ever since I was young. We used to listen to tapes of classic episodes of all of the great mystery and adventure shows. And it was just this wonderful medium that I think it represented this great time when radio was still in its fledgling years and they were being very experimental with the form. So it was given the seriousness that we have in really quality television right now. It's all about the writing and acting and the imaginative use of sound effects, especially to convey these great stories and these great emotions.
Stuart Ullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Ullman, and Book Banter goes on a race against time in James Patterson's latest thriller, Cross My Heart. So set your watches. It's all happening very soon. The Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0239, was Chris Mackerel, the CEO and owner of World FM in New Zealand, which is one of the places you can hear the Stuff File program. And by the way, World FM is expanding coverage. They did it with the purchase of Sunshine Radio and Shed FM. So congratulations to Chris on his burgeoning empire of radio in New Zealand. And thank you very, very much for doing the guest slate on this program and for also playing the Stuff File program on World FM. And by the way, the Stuff File is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 25-year-old Robert Kiefer of Akron, Ohio, was apparently waiting for a check in the mail. When he saw the postman on the street, he was upset that the check still hadn't arrived and allegedly attacked the carrier. Kiefer, witnesses say, grabbed the mailman's dog repellent, a form of pepper spray, and shot the carrier in the eyes and bit his leg several times. When police arrived to assist the letter carrier, Kiefer allegedly attacked them too, so the officers sprayed him with their own pepper spray. Kiefer has been charged with assault. You know, there's a good chance that getting that check forwarded to the jail isn't going to happen, by the way. Meanwhile, 41-year-old Christy Stuber was pulled over for speeding in Wesley Chapel, Florida. After smelling alcohol and noting Stuber's slurred speech, deputies asked her to step out of the car for a field sobriety test. When she got out of the car, the deputies realized Stuber was wearing a shirt and bra and nothing else. The deputies said they had to tell Stuber twice before she understood that she wasn't wearing any pants, and she had to be told twice to put some on before they could start sobriety tests. Stuber allegedly failed the test. Her blood alcohol level was recorded at 0.135 and 0.137%. Ooh, that's pretty high. Now, because she is an aide at Paul R. Smith Middle School, her arrest was reported to the school district and she had to meet with employee relations. But, according to a district spokesperson, no further action was necessary since a DUI is only a misdemeanor. Wait a minute. Somebody who works at a school is seriously plastered and also driving naked from the waist down, but this doesn't send off any flags at the school? Wow. Class dismissed. Well, police in Oregon say they were called to rescue a family who locked themselves in the bathroom when their 22-pound cat became aggressive and attacked a baby. Portland police said the family called 911 Sunday night to report their black and white Himalayan cat had become aggressive and attacked their baby, but did not cause any serious injuries before the family members were able to lock themselves in a bathroom with the family dog. I'm guessing that dog is a bit of a wimp. Anyway, don't take my word for the emergency. Here's the actual 911 call.
911.
Yeah, hi. I have a kind of a particular emergency here. My cat attacked our 7-month-old child, and I kicked the butt in the cat in the rear, and it has went off over the edge, and we aren't safe around the cat. It's a very large Himalayan. And we're trapped in our bedroom. He won't let us out of our door.
Okay, does the child need medical attention?
No, he's just got scratches on his forehead. But the cat, we don't know what to do about the cat. He's trying to attack us. He's very, 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 very hostile. And when I leave out the bedroom to let the police in, I'm going to have to fight this cat.
Hang on just a second. I mean, you said the cat is large. How large?
22 pounds, maybe. I think that the cat is... He's got kind of a history of violence. He's kind of a violent cat already. But he's really bad right now. He's charging us. He's at our door, bedroom door.
One moment, okay?
Do you hear him?
Yeah, I hear him. Hold on. Keep your door shut, okay?
All right. Tell them to be careful. The police.
I will. And do you think the cat will try to attack the police?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Officers arrived at the home and saw the cat flee into the kitchen. They were able to get a dog snare around the feline when it attempted to elude capture on top of the refrigerator, and the cat was safely locked in its crate. The officers told the family it was safe to come out of the bathroom, and the cat was left in their custody. The family's baby did not require medical attention, police said. Now, wait a minute. The cat was left in their custody? I mean, for the love of Stephen King, are these cops mad? Lock that frenzied feline up. Seriously. Cats are evil. And while I'm on that topic, we have one more story in the Stuff File news before we get to our first guest here on the program. British intelligence officers in World War I suspected two cats and a dog of carrying messages from the Germans across British lines, according to documents that were recently revealed. The National Archive published documents online this past week revealing officers from the 36th Brigade of the 12th Division spotted the animals repeatedly crossing British lines in July of 1915 and suspected they were used by the Germans to pass messages across the lines. Two cats and a dog are under suspicion as they have been in the habit of crossing our trenches at night. Steps are being taken to trap them if possible. That's what the officers wrote in their report. The documents published did not reveal whether the animals were ever captured or whether any further evidence was found indicating that they were German agents. Well, I don't know about the dog, but the cats? Definitely. As I often say, they're little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. They'd make great Nazis. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Former mobster Louis Ferrante has been on the show before. We spoke to him about his two previous books, the last one being Mob Rules. Well, this time around, Louis is back on the show to talk about his new television series called Inside the Gangster's Code, which airs on Discovery. Louis joins us on the line right now. Hi, Louis.
Hey, how's it going, Pete? Glad to be on your show.
I'm doing fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So this new show, Inside the Gangster's Code, it's a series that takes you to different gang cultures, and you get to find out their inner workings. How did you come up with this idea, and how did you get Discovery to jump on board?
So
So I was on book tour a couple of years back in the UK, and I did a lot of radio appearances for the BBC, and I did a few news appearances, and I was contacted by production companies as well as Discovery Network, and they wanted to know if I was interested in doing something with them as far as prisons are concerned. And the people who headed up the team over at Discovery were amazing people. I'm not sure if I don't know how they work, if I'm supposed to say their names or not, but amazing, very brilliant, smart people, knew what they wanted to do. Discovery has a bent on putting the right people in the right places. For example, no one should explore prisons but someone who's been there. That's how the Discovery Network feels. They, you know, if it's Bear Grylls going in to do survivor stuff in the middle of the Sahara Desert or the Amazon jungle, he's the guy who knows how to survive. He should be doing it. Or if it's prisons, it should be Lou Ferrante. So when they approached me, they said, "Do you know everything there is to know about prisons?" I said, "I spent 8.5 years in every type of jail you could imagine, medium and high security, penitentiaries, federal, state, county, you name it, I've been there." So, yeah, and I know how it all works inside and out. I had to learn quick in order to survive. And I ended up, when I was in, I got to say, I was a lion in the jungle, you know, because there's no room for, you know, cupcakes in prison. You've got to be the toughest guy if you want to survive. And that's how it's got to be. So, yeah, so that's pretty much how we came across this show together, Discovery Network and myself. And we pulled it off. I mean, we got access to some of the most amazing prisons around the world. First episode that premiered, we visited El Salvador, and it's a country war-torn by civil war. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives over the years while the country was fighting. And a lot of these kids grew up in this war-torn country with blood and guts all over, and they had to rely on their gang members, their fellow gang members, to survive. And you know, it's become a gang-ridden country. And I locked into a prison with 700 murderers. I got to the shot caller, the guy who calls the shots in the prison, the guy who makes the rules, and I got to the inner workings of his psyche to ask him what makes him tick, what makes the gang tick, what do they want out of life, what do they do, why do they do this, is there a chance they might stop? Do they think they could turn their lives around? Do they think he could harness the power of the gang for good, to help society? We went through everything, you name it, we've talked about it. And it's a captivating hour. And, you know, the guys I meet with, I mean, they chop heads off. You know, they're responsible for some of the most heinous crimes in this world, let alone their country, in this entire world. And yet they talk to me. They sit down and talk to me as if I'm a long-lost cousin. I think I break through that barrier with these guys because I lived that life. I walked in their shoes, and I tell them that. I faced life in prison by the age of 26. I had 3 different indictments, and I was listed as a boss of my own crew within the Gambino crime family. And I said, I've been there, done that. So, you know, I don't live that way now. I tell them straight out, you're not talking to a gangster anymore. I'm not a gangster. But I have walked in your shoes, and I have been in prison, and I have faced indictments. I have run from the law. I've been on the lam. I've had shootouts with people. You name it, I've done it. So, you know, that I break through to them, you know, where they know they're not just talking to an ordinary journalist. They're talking to somebody who's been there and done that, and they open up to me way more than they would ever open up to any other journalist. And I think that's the reason why. I don't ask them questions that are hokey, like, why do you kill? That's a typical journalistic question. Do you think what you're doing is good? I get around to that stuff too, but I ask them the stuff that only I would know, gangster questions, and that's what I think the audience loves and appreciates it for. The show's been rating through the roof. It got over 100 million viewers worldwide, and it's now airing in the U.S., and it's rated through the roof in the United States already too.
Well, you mentioned that you were the toughest guy in prison when you went into jail, so clearly when you went into jail, if you had any fear, at least you didn't show it. I'm just wondering.
I didn't, in the beginning, when I first went to prison, I was too stupid to be afraid. I was too ignorant. I didn't fear any man. That's just the way I lived. I felt like I could beat up anybody, like a little small dog who barks at a big pit bull or a German Shepherd, and the little dog thinks it's tougher than the big dog and doesn't realize it could be swallowed in one gulp. That's how stupid I was. I just had no fear. When I changed my life around And I realized there is a higher power in this universe. You could refer to it as God or however you want to refer to it as, but I realized there's a God in my heart. And from that moment on, I fear God. I don't fear any man. So I guess I've been fortunate in my life to not live a life of fear, because I feel like we're here and gone. My mother died in my arms when I was a kid, and she wasted away to nothing and passed away, and no one had any power to change that. No man or woman on earth could change the situation she was in. So I don't fear any man or woman on earth. I just, you know, it's how I live. I fear God, and I live correctly because I fear God. I do right now. I would, if I pass a tin can on the street and a dirty tissue, I'd pick it up even if I didn't put it there, and I put it in a trash pail, because I have a sense that there's a higher power watching everything we do, and that's where my fear comes from. I would be afraid to pass that tissue and not pick it up, but I'm surely not afraid of any human being on earth.
Okay, so you go into these prisons now around the world, some with some of the most heinous criminals that are out there, and you do not fear them. But what about your crew? I mean, you're doing a television show, and I'm just wondering, what's your crew like? Do they ever get afraid in some of the places that you take them?
I'll tell you what, my crew has big stones, because I'm the front man. I'm on TV. So, you know, they don't get credit for the things they do. And they're in there with me. You know, almost always, they're right next to me. Very seldom do they do a long shot where they're somewhere protected. 99.9% of the time, my crew is straight in there with me. And let me tell you something, they are courageous people. And never do they wince either. So I've been fortunate. We did Poland, we did El Salvador, we did Italy, we did the Philippines, and we did America. And I had different guys on the crew at times. We interchanged guys that were closer to the locations. And some of the guys were guys I used again and again. But I will tell you this, they are very courageous, men and women, because we had a couple of female producers as well who were extremely courageous. I feel like I've known women who are more courageous than men and men who are more courageous than women, so I don't think gender has anything to do with that. But I do want to point out, I want to emphasize that I had some of the most courageous men and women on my team every step of the way. So I've been fortunate enough, and none of them showed any fear at any time. I did ask them to respond to my cues if I sensed something. There was one instance when I was with a director on the ground, and one of the prisoners was called over. One of the shot callers in the prison was called over to straighten out a beef. And he said, no, let's finish the scene first. And I said, I grabbed the director, and I said, let him go. And he goes, no, we got to finish. We're on a time clock. They're going to throw us out of the prison in a little while. I go, I don't care. Let him go. And when the guy left and took off, I explained to the director that he's the only man in this prison that could stop a homicide. The warden can't. The guards can't. Only him. And his word and his power. If he's called for something, you let him go and let him handle that, because if this prison riots, we're all dead in here. And he said, I get it. And when the guy came back, sure enough, two guys were on the brink of a knife fight. They both had their weapons in their hands, and a couple of guys were trying to keep them at bay. And when the guy that took off on us arrived there, he said one word and they put their knives down, because whoever won would be killed if they didn't listen to him. He's the shot caller. He's the boss of that prison. And so I just asked my crew, from now on, please don't second-guess me. Please don't question me. I've lived here. I know what's going on. If I tell you to do something, just listen to me, and that's our best chances of survival, because I'm the only one who's been here. But that said, extremely courageous and intelligent people I traveled with. And my hat's off to Discovery Channel for providing me with such courageous people.
Got about a minute, so I have to ask you this. I mean, you have been yourself incarcerated in maximum security prisons in the United States, but now you travel the world. Compare, if you can briefly, maximum security in the United States to some of the places you've been to for the show.
Prison is prison in a certain way. When you're in there, I know the rules. The rules are usually the same. But there was one prison that, off the top of my head, that was so different from the United States. The Philippines. I was in a place called Bilibid Prison in the Philippines. 20,000 violent criminals packed behind one wall. They have created their own city in there with their own government. There are 12 gang leaders that sort of formed a democratic government in which all 12 gang leaders meet once a week, and vote on important issues. And these guys, they definitely, they have a sense of justice according to their own rules, that is. And, you know, if justice needs to be swift, they're swift with it. If mercy needs to be exhibited, they exhibit mercy. But they do discuss everything at this meeting once a week. And the 12 gang leaders control the prison and the 12 separate gangs. The prison is sectioned off into these 12 separate gangs. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. It's a nod in a certain way to these prisoners that they're able to form in this hell of a world, isolated from humanity with walls around them. They were able to form sort of a semblance of democratic government in there. And for the most part, because of that, they do keep the peace, because a lot of issues get straightened out without resorting to violence because of this sort of like board that they've created. So very, very rarely is there violence because of that. And I think that's why I say hats off to them for being able to conduct that themselves.
It's a very interesting inside look to what goes on in prison, as hosted by an insider himself. Lou, I thank you very, very much for talking about your show, Inside the Gangster's Code, on Discovery. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Pete. Please tell your listeners, too. Just demand it, order it. If it's not airing in Canada, which it should have or should be, but if not, please demand it and order it from Discovery. Thanks, Pete.
Louis Ferrante, host of Inside the Gangster's Code, which airs on Discovery. The next episode, which airs on Thursday, deals with the tough prisons in Poland. To find the show, check your local listings.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about old-time radio theater, plus Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter, and, of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and don't forget, An Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, when a car plowed into a Kroger grocery store in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, there were indications that the driver had crashed into the store on purpose. Not to mention that this is the second time June A. Blocker, age 52, has crashed into a Kroger store. The first time was 15 years ago. She had been an employee of that store, but after allegedly threatening other employees, she was banned from the store. She was charged with several crimes in the incident. In the most recent case, Blocker was charged with 2 counts of criminal attempt to commit murder, 2 counts of second-degree assault, 3 counts of first-degree wanton endangerment, 1 count of first-degree criminal mischief, and, of course, driving under the influence. She faces up to 20 years in prison if convicted of all the crimes and getting the book thrown at her. In the meantime, the third time, 15 years from now, should be the charm. Yeah. A patron at a restaurant in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, reached into his pocket to get his parking valet ticket and managed to pull the trigger of his legally carried pistol. The one shot ricocheted so much that at least 6 patrons were hit, but only 1 needed hospital treatment. The accidental shooter was not named, but was revealed to be an off-duty Miami-Dade corrections officer. This was an accident that could have happened anywhere, said the restaurant's owner, Megan Leckie. And just what is the name of her restaurant, you ask? Glad you did. It's called Shooters. It's an iconic name, Leckie said. We want to inject life back into the brand. Now, I don't know what's more frightening. The fact that an accidental shooting of 1 bullet in a busy restaurant could injure 6 people, and this would be one you'd need the Zapruder film to decipher, or the lackadaisical response to the whole shooting in general. Well, it is Florida, so what can I say? Briton Jack Harvey, age 42, drew a 3-plus-year sentence in Truro Crown Court in February following his guilty plea on drug charges. Now, earlier he had insisted that police had planted the drugs that they found in his house and car, and even that a stranger, maybe some filthy woman, he said, must be the owner of that cocaine and heroin. Now, where did the police find the cocaine and heroin? Glad you ask. Why, they were taped to his testicles. Yes, I'm sure that's just where the cops planted them. Now, if they could do that, that would be the definition of stealth. Now, some people really, really, really like McDonald's. Zachary Boynton of Oneata, New York, loves McDonald's a lot. Last weekend, Boynton was so determined to eat at McDonald's that it took 2 separate arrests to stop him. Boynton was first taken into custody at around 1 a.m. last Sunday, after driving into the back of a car stopped in front of him at a McDonald's drive-thru. Upon arriving on the scene, police determined Boynton was 3 times over the legal limit, so they arrested him and released him hours later to a sober driver. That sober driver took Boynton home, but should have swung by McDonald's first. At 5 a.m., probably now only just 2 sheets to the wind, police again responded to a call at the McDonald's after Boynton inadvertently drove his car into the building. From there, he was taken to hospital, presumably still having yet eaten any McDonald's that night. Boynton was also arrested in November of last year, by the way, for driving under the influence as well. He probably won't be driving again for a while. In the meantime, McDonald's should put him in an advertisement. Seriously. I mean, either that or start offering delivery. Well, John Rogers of Geneva, Florida, recently acquitted in a shooting death using Florida's Stand Your Ground defense, convinced a judge in February to return his guns, which police had confiscated when they arrested him. Rogers says he needs the guns for protection because he is particularly vulnerable in that he is blind. Yes, blind. And he wants his guns back. Ah, yes. The state of Florida, where all logic goes completely out the window. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the firm 3D Babies has begun selling for $800 8-inch-long fetal sculptures developed from 3D ultrasound images. Computer graphics and 3D printing technology, which is printing successive layers of material continuously, eventually creating a physical object. 4-inch and 2-inch models are also available for $400 and $200, respectively. For celebrity hounds who are not planning imminent parenthood, the company sells 1 fetal sculpture off the shelf, the Kim Kardashian Kanye West fetus. That would be famous Baby Northwest, and you can purchase that for only $250. Now, I'm sorry, but wouldn't a 3D ultrasound look pretty much like Gollum from Lord of the Rings? I mean, talk about creepy on so many levels. Ooh. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Shane Grinn is one of the minds behind Old Time Radio Theater, a monthly podcast featuring some of Montreal's finest talent dedicated to recreating the magic of radio's golden age. They perform their works once a month in front of a live audience. And Shane joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications from right here in Montreal to talk about it. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what was the fascination for you? Because I'm a big, big fan of old-time radio. What's the fascination for you for what a lot of people have always thought or may have thought is a kind of a dying medium, a dying art?
Well, I would go so far as to say it's probably a dead art by now. I've been a fan of old-time radio theater ever since I was young. We used to listen to tapes of classic episodes of Suspense, of Lights Out, Escape, all of the great mystery and adventure shows. And it was just this wonderful medium that I think it represented this great time when radio was still in its fledgling years and they were being very experimental with the form. So it was given the seriousness that we have in really quality television right now. It's all about the writing and acting and the imaginative use of sound effects, especially to convey these great stories and these great emotions. I've always kind of been a fan of old art forms. I'm involved in burlesque. I've accompanied silent films, and I just think there's this great feeling of nostalgia and history that goes with any of these old art forms that we don't see a lot of anymore.
Now, you're certainly not old enough to have lived through all of the types of entertainment genres you're talking about. How unique do you find you are as compared to your own peers?
I think probably when I was in high school, I thought I was pretty unique. But as I found friends in the arts communities, I think there are a lot of people who really appreciate these older forms. There's definitely a market for people who really do like old-time radio and have that same nostalgic attitude towards it that I do.
So beyond the idea of being just a fan of old-time radio, you've taken it one step further, as I mentioned. You have now put together old-time radio theater. What was the first step?
The idea actually came about a number of years ago when Mainline Theater first opened up the Mini Main, which is the space in the front room. And at the time, I talked to them about this idea of, hey, wouldn't it be great to put on radio plays in front of an audience and record them here? And it was an idea we kind of toyed with for a little while, but didn't get around to until about 3 years ago. Amy Blackmore, who now runs Mainline Theater and is the festival director at The Fringe, approached me and said, hey, we've got some contacts at CKUT who'd be interested in doing something with us. How about we put on one of those radio plays? So for the previous 3 years, every year at Fringe, we've done one live on the air on CKUT. And once we'd gotten the hang of it or you know, had the experience of putting these together and knowing what the flow is like, knowing what the rehearsal process is like, selecting the material, and what kind of awesome talent pool we have to work with in the city, we finally made the decision to say, hey, why don't we go ahead and do this monthly as a live event the way we originally talked about.
And for those in our listening audience who don't know, CKUT is a McGill University radio station. The putting this together, how many people are involved?
It's a pretty small crew. Basically, there's myself who does the selection of the music and the live sound effects, as well on some of the plays. I do play live music on an organ to accompany it as well. There's Andy Grinn, who directs the shows. Consistently, since we've done the podcast form, which is on nomoreradio.com, we've been working with Paula Flallo, who's been our engineer, who's been handling the technical side of things. And the episodes themselves range. So far, we've had between 3 to 5 actors per episode. And this is something that could change and can vary. Sometimes we have doubling of voices, and sometimes we don't. So we do have, I think there's about 8 or 9 different actors we've worked with over the years. Maybe 10, 11, actually. But only on average 4 to 5 per show.
Now, you've already done your first one, which I believe was Protection, which is an episode of X-1, correct?
That's correct.
And will all the shows that you do, will they be basically recreations of previous old-time radio shows that were done, or do you plan to do anything more contemporary?
For now, the plan is to stick with things that have already been done. We've actually been recording the podcast live since last September, but have only just recently launched the podcast. Now, we've been the live events, we record two episodes at a time. So now we have enough in the bank that we can go ahead and start releasing them on a monthly basis, which will give us the flexibility to take some time off while still putting out podcasts every month. But that's definitely something we want to work on in the future, is putting together new content in the classic style.
You do it in front of a live audience. How large of a room are we talking about as far as audience size is concerned?
The room is small. It could only hold about 40 people. And there's also the possibility that if we start attracting bigger audiences, we will move into a larger space.
And considering you're doing basically, for now, you're doing the dramas and the mysteries, and you are recording them for a podcast, why the live audience? What does that add to it as far as you're concerned?
Well, we originally did it on the radio, which has this immediacy where people are living live and you kind of just have to fly by the seat of your pants. There's no second takes. There's no going back and editing them. So we really wanted to capture, for the one part, capture that spirit of immediacy where if somebody flubs a line, they're just going to have to keep going. Which, if you listen to a lot of old-time radio, you'll hear a lot of that on the actual recordings. The other reason was because people enjoy the form. They want to see how it's put together, especially when it comes down to the live sound effects, which are a treat to see created live.
Who gets the job of doing the Foley work, doing the sound effects work?
I'm just going to correct you. There is apparently a point of contention for radio artists where they don't consider it Foley, which is specifically used in the film and television medium. It is a sound effects artist is the proper term for it. But of course, I'm the one who gets to do that because it was my idea and I want all the fun for myself.
Now, how do you go about choosing the episodes that you you do? Because there's such a wide variety of programming that's out there. Was it just personal favorites, ones that you thought fit particular actors, stuff that might be easier or more challenging to do? How did you go about making the choices?
I generally limit the style. We haven't done a lot in the way of comedies yet because if we do comedies, it'll take a lot more rehearsal to nail the comedic timing. And so we've yet to go to that level. So first I limited the scope to just our overall taste, which is the mysteries, the science fiction, the weird and creepy stories. And then usually what I do is I see who's available on the date first. I figure out how many actors we have, and then I just start looking for scripts that will have the right number of performers. And then I just choose something from there that will be fun or that suits them. We've had some pretty cool ones that will be coming up pretty soon.
Now, have you had the opportunity to talk, now that you've recorded some of these, obviously, have you had the opportunity to get in contact or talk with anyone who may have been around or gone through old-time radio the first time around, either as a performer or someone who was involved in a production?
You know what? I haven't. I think that would be really great if there was anybody that I could get in contact with who was still around. I mean, there are lots of people who over the last decades have been recreating the medium and keeping it alive. Although not generally with actual radio stations and broadcasts, mostly, you know, hobbyists who do this for fun or small local community theater organizations who'll put these live shows on. But there's the field of radio plays in general, though, I find is something that is heading a lot more online. You're finding a lot more in terms of podcasts because the larger radio networks are investing less in the form, so I find the general public is you know taking this gap in the culture and filling it in by creating their own content.
You mentioned that you're doing mostly the old time stuff, and that you in the future will plan to do more contemporary stuff. Would you ever consider writing your own stuff, producing original material?
Absolutely. I've definitely toyed with the idea of writing some stuff myself, and also I have some friends who are interested in the prospect as well. One friend of mine is working on a series, so they're, I think, editing that and making sure it's practically feasible to produce. That's one thing I find very interesting about the form is it's very different from live theater because the conventions of radio are very different. You don't have a visual element, so all of the action either has to be verbally described or very obvious through the use of sound effects. So you'll find a lot more narration, which isn't something you see a lot of in live theater.
How can one find the show online? You have a website for it?
Yep, nomoreradio.com.
Nomoreradio.com.
Which is a local podcast network where you can find all sorts of really interesting podcasts. And if you go to nomoreradio.com and under podcasts, look for Old Time Radio Theater.
Old Time Radio Theater. The current one, the first one you've done, is Protection, X-1, which is currently up on the site. What's the next one that's coming up?
You caught me. We hadn't actually decided yet. We do have a number in the can that we can pull from, but it might be probably an episode of Suspense.
Suspense, one of my favorites. So that people can just check the website and find out which one it is. Basically, what you want to do is keep the audience in suspense, correct?
Exactly.
Shane, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
Shane Grin from Old Time Radio Theater. Again, you can check out their website at nomoreradio.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In September of 2013, historic floods ravaged Denver, Colorado. A portion of a road north of Denver was washed away, and a man driving there plunged into a raging creek. His car turned over, but he was able to call 911. First responders included rescue divers, and after about an hour, they pulled him to safety. At the time of his rescue, the man thanked the divers for saving his life, but 6 months later, he filed an intent to sue the local officials, including his rescuers. He claims the rescue took too long and that he now suffers from muscle spasms. Let's be fair, even the man's lawyer acknowledges that the storm was an act of God, and he says it's unfortunate to cast responsibility on, quote, the men and women who risk their own lives, end of quote. He's absolutely right about that, but he also fails to point out that a costly lawsuit could actually jeopardize future rescue efforts and put lives at risk. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we're going from cover to cover with Stuart Nauman. Hello, sir.
Hi, Peter. You know what? You were mentioning it when we did the last segment about Pierre Burton.
Yes.
And killed a lot of trees in his lifetime.
Yes, yes.
Well, we're going to, in this edition of Book Banter, look at an author who's killed his share of trees quite a lot over the past 15, 20 years, James Patterson.
Ah, yes.
And he knows how to grind them out and use a lot of pulp, let me tell you.
But there's a difference between James Patterson and the amount of trees he's killed and the amount of trees that Pierre Burton's killed. Pierre Burton has killed more trees in less books.
True. Patterson seems to, like, stagger the amount of trees he kills for the number of books that he publishes.
Yes.
But he's published a lot.
How many has he done?
Oh, it's, you know what? I lost count because not only he's done thrillers for adults, he's written nonfiction, he's written books for kids, he's written not just the Alex Cross books, but so many other series of books. I mean, his publisher, Little Brown, I mean, you look at the catalog every season, there's always like four or five James Patterson books coming out. Incredible.
Yeah. They're going to want him to stay alive as long as humanly possible. They don't want the same effect as when Warner Brothers went into a panic when Mel Blanc died.
Oh, yeah. That's true. It's true. That was an original voice, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But James Patterson, let me tell you, his famous character is Washington, D.C. detective Alex Cross. And he's back in action, Alex Cross, with his latest crime thriller, Cross My Heart. And as usual, Cross is in hot pursuit of a psychotic serial killer in his capital hometown. Only this time, It's personal. Very personal. Now, Cross is assigned to investigate a horrific mass murder in a downtown Washington massage parlor in which one of the victims is former NFL superstar Madman Francones, and one of the young women who worked at the parlor ends up being abducted. Also around the same time as the murders take place, two babies from separate affluent D.C. families are quietly abducted under false pretenses. And with the help of his partner Samson and his wife Bree, who is also a police officer, Cross manages to discover that the mass murder and the baby abductions are not just isolated incidents, but are characteristics that were similar to two other serial crimes that happened in two different cities across the country, the U.S., and occurred practically every 2 years to the day. Now, but while Cross is in a desperate race against time to avert these abductions from ending in tragedy like the previous two occasions, an even bigger evil is slowly menacing him and his extended family. However, he is not even aware this menace is shadowing his every move, not to mention that of his family. And it comes in the form of Marcus Sunday, a scholar who wrote a book about what it takes to being a perfect criminal. And using all the principles and characteristics that are featured in his book, Sunday, who also goes by the name of Terry Mulcher, lives out the modus operandi of the perfect criminal, in which he uses Alex Cross and his family as his intended target. Now, Patterson has once again accomplished writing a crime thriller that, like many of his bestsellers, keeps the reader in never-ending suspense and wants him to consume each bite-sized chapter, which averages about 2 to 3 pages each, until the bitter end. Now, the writing is crisp and uncomplicated and filled with plenty of details of the practices and procedures that law enforcement officers utilize towards the solving of heinous crimes in question. And by the way, without having to give away too much of the book's climax, the reader is given the serial treatment, as the story remains incomplete and will be concluded in a subsequent Cross thriller that could be probably be published before this year is out. Now, you may get that wow feeling or end up feeling cheated after reading Cross My Heart, but don't forget, for Alex Cross, this case or battle of wits he is currently involved with is personal, very personal.
Now, when you were reading this particular latest James Patterson book,
yes,
in your mind's eye, when you saw Alex Cross,
yeah,
was he using a Visa card or was he wearing a dress?
Well, it's everywhere you want to be, Peter.
Like, which Alex Cross do you see when you read the book, especially since, you know, they've been made into films now by two very well-known prominent actors?
Yeah.
Which one do you envision, or do you not envision either actor when you read a book like that?
Well, you know what? I think of more of a generic Alex Cross. Yeah.
I bring it up because, as you know, I'm a major, major James Bond fan.
Yeah.
And I'm currently reading all of Ian Fleming's books in the order that he wrote them in. And when I first started reading them, I was concerned that with so many great actors who have played James Bond, that I would envision one, if not all of them, in the books.
Right.
But surprisingly, I have not.
So it's just a generic James Bond for you when you read them.
Exactly. So I was just curious to know, since, you know, you're reading Patterson and there are two people best known for playing Cross, that you would have envisioned one or the other.
No, it never came to mind. I never envisioned when I read Alex Cross as either actor, which is the other way around. When I read the James Bond books, especially the ones that the Fleming books that based on the Connery movies, I always pictured Sean Connery doing, you know, as James Bond when I read the books.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyway, this week's book is,
it's called Cross My Heart by James Patterson, published by Little Brown, and it's $32.
And dare I say, do you have other Patterson books to recommend?
Well, not Patterson books, but which have been too obvious.
Okay.
I thought maybe going on more or less the same genre. Like, if you want a good serial thriller mystery, murder mystery, read Stieg Larsson's trilogy, you know, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Right.
So, you know, that, because it's the same characters, you know, and I think it has this continuous thread amongst the three books. But if you want a good race against time thriller, read Frederick Forsyth's The Day of the Jackal.
Ooh,
classic. Published back in 1970.
Classic.
Excellent book.
Classic indeed. And again, this week's book is
Cross My Heart by James Patterson, that writing machine, published by Little Brown, $32 in hardcover.
And if people want to track you down in a mysterious way, how can they go about doing so?
Well, this is no race against time, let me tell you, but you can read me in the Montreal Times every week, in paper or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, Peter. Let's now off to that race against time.
Absolutely. Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed still have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you before we get to that point. And, you know, this first one could probably be the idiot of the day. She's pretty darn close, but I feel more sad for her than to make her the idiot. You'll see in a moment why. Blondie Bennett, she's 38 years old, is not just a California model selling provocative Barbie doll photos of herself online, which, by the way, features her and her recently augmented 32 double J breast implants. She is at work on a longer-range project to remake herself completely as a human Barbie doll, to include the popular critique that Barbie represents not only bodily perfection but mindlessness. Bennett said she has had 20 hypnotherapy sessions to help her appear more confused and vacant. Wow. How do you walk into somebody's office and say, can I have sessions that will make me more stupid? How do you do that? The person must see dollar signs in their eyes. Anyway, she goes on to say, I want people to see me as a plastic sex doll, and being brainless is a big part of that. She said she is doing well in that she recently got lost driving to her mother's house. And before you have to ask, no, her mother hasn't moved. Her mother lives where she's always lived. She just got lost going to her mother's house. Wow. Speaking of being mindless, I mean, if she wants to become confused and vacant, that is not a long trip. That's not one she needs a GPS for. I mean, does this story really need a punchline? No. Didn't think so. Meanwhile, as Americans know, our Canadian healthcare system, funded largely by taxes, is dramatically less expensive than America's. Well, unless, of course, you're a dog. CTV reported in February that increasingly pet owners in Winnipeg, Manitoba are making the 120-mile car trip to Grand Forks, North Dakota, because U.S. vets and their prices are significantly lower than comparable services by Canadian vets. Now, one Winnipeg family facing a $650 teeth cleaning plus blood work for Jackson, their Shih Tzu, took him to Grand Forks on a road trip where the bill only came to $205. Well, you see, this is why I never get as sick as a dog. That's all I'm saying. And an 86-year-old man celebrating his selection in November by the Howard Stern radio show to be treated to a fancy meal followed by a menage a trois session with prostitutes at Nevada's famed Bunny Ranch. And by the way, we had Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Bunny Ranch, on the program just last week, if you have been paying attention. And you have to pay attention because, as you know, there could be a test. Anyway, as I was saying, he had an opportunity, because he won on Howard Stern's radio show, to be treated to a fancy meal followed by a menage a trois session with prostitutes at the Bunny Ranch. And he called it, this 86-year-old man, he called it the greatest day of my life. However, he failed to make it through dinner as he choked to death on a piece of steak. Yes, so close, yet so far. Well, I suppose there are worse ways he could have choked to death that night. But he chose a piece of steak. There are other jokes I want to say, but this is really a family radio show. But at this very moment, boys and girls, as we wrap things up, it is now indeed time for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Police in Key West, Florida responded to a call reporting three suspicious people on a resort property. When they arrived, officers say Guy Lancaster, age 46, allegedly hid a bag of cocaine in a flower pot. He was arrested. I don't understand, Lancaster reportedly told officers when he got to the jail. I thought cocaine wasn't illegal in Florida. He is being held without bond. You know, what person who is even remotely in their right mind thinks cocaine is legal in any state, let alone Florida? Well, one kind of person, and one kind of person only. An idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0239. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0239. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for an next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.